farming for a moment here. You know, we talked about the breakthroughs in batteries and giving away the technology to China for no apparent reason. No good reason, that's for sure. And the assault on farmers, I mean, it's going on everywhere. To one extent or another. And if you think it can't happen here, you're out of your mind. Look at what these idiots do. We need to go organic. Why? Organic farming often takes more resources, produces less food, creates more problems, right? Don't have to like it, but there it is, right? Anyhow, the farmers are under attack. And the war on farmers around the world is creating massive backlash. There's a brand new book by Mark Morano. And it takes a closer look at this attack on the food supply under the guise of climate change. We must kill all the cows because of climate, because cows flatulate. And I say, well, gee. You know, in the year 1900, there were an estimated 500,000 white-tailed deer in North America. Think about that. Just five. In 1955, three white-tailed deer in Hillsdale County, Michigan, was front page news of the Hillsdale Daily News. Go back and check. 1955. They found deer tracks, did somebody, in Hillsdale County, Michigan. And the DNR came out with a biologist and verified, yep, deer tracks, front page news. Michigan now has about 2 million white-tailed deer, depending on the year. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes lower, but we'll just call it 2 million for average purposes, to average it out. 2 million. 35 million white-tailed deer in the United States of America. 35 million. And wouldn't they flatulate too? Wouldn't they destroy the planet? The same, or is deer flatulence okay and cow flatulence? I'm just trying to figure out what's going on here. Anyhow, the war on farmers in the book by Mark Morano and the attacks on farmers under the guise of climate change. We'll start with bite number 11. Bite number 11. Bite 11, go.
This is coming out of these climate goals. They're going after modern chemical fertilizers, which have produced massive high-yield agriculture, which has fed the world for decades. It was the agricultural revolution that we should be proud of. But instead, they're turning the clock back, and they're claiming a climate crisis where none exists, and they're now going after our food supply. And this is going to be devastating consequences because, as the old Chinese proverb says, when food is on the table, there are many problems. When there's no food, there's only one problem.
Doesn't that sum it up? When there's food on the table, there's lots of problems to talk about. If there's no food on the table, there's only one problem to talk about. And yet you see these attacks on genetically modified organisms. Listen, GMOs, which means drought-resistant wheat and corn, insect-resistant grains, drought-resistant grains, they're all genetically modified and studied in places like Michigan State University, the Ohio State University, Texas A&M, all over the land-grant colleges of this country became agricultural juggernauts, the ones that devised the ability. We produce more food per acre than at any time in human history. We produce more food using less energy than at any time in human history. That means we can, you know, in 1980, the amount of corn and beans that came off an acre, we've about doubled that now since 1980. And we can resist drought up here in the upper Midwest. We've had pretty dry years, pretty dry year this year specifically. Even in drought years, the per acre yield in bushels for corn and beans and wheat is beyond what was produced in the early 1980s under ideal conditions. And do you think a kid sitting there say, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo in the center of sub-Saharan Africa, do you think he gives a damn if it's a GMO rice in his bowl or if it's just rice in his bowl and he's got something to eat? Wake up, people. The folks at Michigan State and Michigan and Ohio State and Texas A&M and Wisconsin and all over this country, those professors, those professionals, they eat the same food. So do their kids and grandkids. Do you think they're trying to poison us all? Oh, GMOs, you're going to grow a doorknob out of your forehead. Gee, Steve, what is it in the middle of your forehead? It's a doorknob. Yeah, well, I ate some of that GMO food and I grew a doorknob right here in the middle of my forehead. If you open it up, it'll open up the top of my head. Eek! Hello? 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 People dying in the top of my head. Steve. Doesn't work that way, boys and girls. We live longer, more productive, healthier lives than at any time in human history. Stop belly aching. Stop looking for problems. Good God. The average lifespan in America in the year I was born was 65 years. The average lifespan in America now is almost 80 years. It was higher until we started importing fentanyl at record levels. And having 107,000 young people die in this country from fentanyl overdoses, which is actually higher now, that has driven down the life expectancy. But if you don't do drugs, if you don't stick needles in your arm, and you don't take bizarre pills you don't know where they came from that will kill you, and you live a healthy lifestyle, your chance of living past 80 is terrific. And a good life past 80. A lot sharper than Joe Biden, for example, who is a very old 79. Like I said, in dog years, I think he's 164. At any rate, science is good. GMOs are fine. And taking away fertilizer in cows is abject stupidity. There, I think I've had my say. I'll be right back.
We can't see tomorrow, but we can hear it. Tomorrow sounds like hydrogen being added to natural gas to make it more sustainable. It sounds like solar panels generating thousands of megawatts. And it sounds like carbon being captured and stored, keeping it out of our atmosphere. We've been bridging to a sustainable energy future for more than 20 years. Because what we do today helps ensure tomorrow is on. Enbridge. Life takes energy.
If you're looking for a new dog, I always tell people start at the shelter because it's a great idea. But sometimes that doesn't work out. I found the Barking Boutique. They also suggest starting at the shelter. But if it doesn't work, they have a world of wet noses, loving nuzzles, and puppy breath to choose from. The Barking Boutique began when its owner, David, was heartbroken by what he found looking for a new dog, puppy mills, and people he didn't trust. He decided he could do better, and he did. You can start your search right now. TheBarkingBoutique.com. New arrivals daily at TheBarkingBoutique.com.